ready. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. I got me and Justin Troop tonight.
Woo!
I mean, seriously, Justin, thanks for joining me. We're actually recording on a Friday night, so it's like 10:30 Eastern time, Friday night.
Don't tell people, Paul.
It is party time, man.
I have no friends.
But there's a lot going on in the 40K world. Obviously, you know, today we released the Necron Part 1, and today we're going to be talking about the Drukhari.
It reminds me of, what was it, 7th, when it was just like, bam, 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 bam. We were getting codexes, and we're getting that right now again. I love it.
We're in that, you know, that couple of week gap here, and there's going to be more stuff coming. Obviously, there's a desire on the Games Workshop side to get all the codexes out in a reasonable amount of time, so everyone gets to benefit from things like the stratagems and the various faction traits and stuff, so... I mean, I welcome it. Keep it coming.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's only getting better.
We're trying to catch up after taking so much time away to do the other side of it, the stuff we talk about, the tournament playing.
All right, man. Let's get into it.
Yeah, man. Let me talk about this is the power from pain. That's something that is common to a lot of the Dark Eldar. And this is something units with this ability gain a bonus depending on which battle round it is, as shown in the table below. Note that all bonuses are cumulative. And that's something that's neat that we've seen this in the Dark Eldar before, sorry, the Drukhari before. We've actually seen this kind of play out on all the evil elf side of things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially, we were talking about the Daughters of Cain from the Age of Sigmar side, how that they actually get some bonuses that are cumulative per round because of their devotion to these sinister arts.
Yeah, it's an interesting mechanic, too, because it does make the army play a little bit unique, because if you're building a strategy to one certain aspect, you know, you have to wait for that round to come up to get that bonus or that benefit. And it really makes this army a little bit more unique as to how it plays, because it's all about timing now.
Well, I do like we'll jump to this, the number five, the highest thing on this chart is that the Mantle of Agony, subtract one from the leadership characteristic of enemy units that are within 6 inches of any enemy units with this bonus in the morale phase. This means that, you know, if in the late game that units are taking extra casualty when they fail that morale. And that's kind of what you want in late game, because your opponent is going to be picking up models faster. And if I can compare this to the Daughters of Cain on the Sigmar side, the Daughters of Cain have the opposite, to where that they pass all morale checks in that phase of the game. But this is instead of buffing the Drukhari units, this is needling the opponent's units, which I think is kind of neat.
Yeah, and like you said, in the late game, what's cool is this is kind of like that dagger that slips between the ribs. You know, you're going to start really feeling this
anytime
when
you
don't want it.
Yeah, anytime you get that neg one, what you really need to think of is one more model. Not another wound, it's another model that's getting reduced. Number four is automatically pass morale. Number three is add one to the hit rolls made for units with this bonus in the fight phase. That means we're going to see a lot of things hitting on twos and threes. Yeah, that's... I think that's very strong. And then the Eager to Flay is number two. You can reroll the dice when determining how far a unit with this bonus moves when it advances or charges.
That's huge.
That's number two, man. That is second battle round, you're rerolling charges. Yep. And then Inured to Suffering is number one. Roll a d6 for each time a model with this bonus loses a wound. On a six, the model does not lose that wound.
Yeah, so it's cool. You get your durability right out of the gate. You're setting up for round two for your charges and everything. If you're unable to do it in round one, which, you know, we live in that world, there's turn one charges, but, you know, turn two is generally when you're charging. So you're getting that buff. You're stuck in combat. Now you're getting that extra attack benefit in round three, possibly. It's just cool to see how they progressed it for you. I think it's very interesting.
The combat drugs is one of those things that you can roll or pick the result from, and I think this is absolutely awesome. The number three on this chart is the Hypex, plus two to the move characteristic.
Oh, wow.
There's also a plus one attack, plus one strength, plus one to toughness, and then plus one to weapon skill, meaning that if you were a 3+, it would bump it to a 2+, and then there's a plus two to leadership. I think that the fact that you can, before the battle round, roll on the table to see which combat drug the unit is using. Alternatively, you can pick the bonus the unit receives, but if you do this, you cannot choose a bonus that has already been taken by another unit until all six combat drugs have been taken once each. That's similar to what we we saw with the Satan powers. But if you really want a unit to book it across the table, you can pick that plus two move characteristic.
That's a really cool concept of how they did that to allow you to put your benefits where you need them to. You know, so maybe this guy doesn't need to move fast, but he does need to. He's got some guys that are about to shoot him. Give him that toughness benefit.
Well, you need these guys to move fast. Yeah, you do. I think you have to. There's a little bit of strategy involved because it's at the beginning of the game when you choose this stuff.
Oh, okay. I thought you said at the beginning of the round. My fault.
Before the battle is when you roll that, or is when you roll or pick this.
You can roll if you're feeling lucky. But if you really want to game it and alter the units that you need altered, and that's going to be their dedicated role or battlefield role, then yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and we're going to kind of go through the stuff here. The Dark Eldar, they have the potential things like suffer from the most powerful ability in 40K right now, which is the fallback. But a character, Lilith Hesperax, has the no escape ability. Roll off if an infantry unit within 1 inch of any enemy model with this ability wishes to fall back. The unit can only fall back if the player controlling it wins the roll off.
Oh, yeah, that's going to hamstring a few lists out there, in my opinion.
I feel like she had that in the index, but I don't know when the index came out, if everyone quite, kind of grasped just how game powerful the fallback ability is for screens and whatnot.
Yeah, that's true. And the index for the Jakari, the points and stuff were a little off. They needed this book to rework some things to make them playable, which they for sure are now.
Well, I mean, it's stuff like, of course the stratagems make everything better. And then they also had the ability, they had one of the few abilities that would allow them to do things like shoot out of their transports. Now, remember, there are no fire points and stuff anymore. And what a lot of people are doing have just been taking the Kabbalite warriors as a relatively inexpensive troop choice for Yunari. But I believe we're going to see the Dark Eldar kind of come into their own. And that's what we've been seeing in some GW previews over the last few days of the stratagems, which are incredibly powerful. And I want to go ahead and talk. And what we're talking about is stuff you might actually see, and then be used on the table. And I want to talk about the stratagem that got spoiled today, and that's a 3 command point stratagem, the Agents of Vect. Use this stratagem just after your opponent has spent command points to use a stratagem, but before the effects of that stratagem are resolved. Roll a d6. On a 1, your opponent's stratagem is resolved as normal. On a 2 through 5, your opponent's command points are refunded, but the stratagem they were using is not resolved and cannot be attempted again this phase. On a 6, the stratagem they were attempting to use is not resolved, cannot be attempted again this phase, and the command points spent are lost. The stratagem cannot be used to affect stratagems that are used before the battle or during deployment.
Holy cow. That's mind blowing. This
is crazy, dude.
Yeah, that's game changing almost. Wow. I'm almost speechless. It was terrible for podcasting, but
you know that I love Blood Angels, but this bones the Blood Angels.
Yeah, I mean, well, that you're shutting off stuff like that are, most armies right now are built around a stratagem. The ability to shut that stratagem down is just, it's going to break backs left and right.
Let's talk, it's reliably shut it down. Because remember that you can burn, now this is 3 command points. So it's a healthy investment. But then you could use another command point to reroll your die if you roll that 1.
That's true, yeah. Wow.
So 4 command points, what you've done is you've broken the, you prevented someone from fighting a second time. That means that, let's say, berserkers that use, they have their double fight and then they try to fight again for the third time. You've slowed down their movement by 6 extra inches. For the Blood Angels, you prevented them to roll their 3d6 charge. There are a ton of things that you have just done.
Yeah, kill shot out of the picture. That's something Chaos players, they can kind of use that to cripple their opponent.
Yeah, Chaos Marine players. I mean, there's the dead walk again for the for 1 round of the Death Guard right now to get back Poxwalkers. You are stopping that, allowing you.
It's so crazy.
To allowing you to gun down the Poxwalkers for a turn.
This is definitely one of those things now that I feel like Jakari, we're going to see them, you know, a lot. Yunari is already strong. So,
Dark Eldar are one of those armies that lots of people have had. So they've had they've had the transports, they've had the warriors, you know, it's the things that they have had for a long time that they've been kind of waiting for them to be good. And these guys have suffered a bit in recent history because they didn't have a lot of that oomph, that punch.
Oh yeah. I've always referred to the Dark Eldar Jakari army as a scalp. You know, it's a very tough army to really play. You have to be very precise with everything that you're doing. And that's kind of like what that stratagem does too, is that's like your incision mark right there. Now, you know, now it's time. What do you do to capitalize on that stratagem? You shut down your opponent's whatever that stratagem is, right? And you know that it's shut down because, like you said, you're going to burn that fourth point if you have to. Additional
command point, yeah. I mean, yeah. You can see, you can tell when your back is about to be broken.
Oh yeah,
you can see that stuff being telegraphed, and so that, I mean, you know when it's coming. You can save your command points just for that. So your troop options in this book are the Kabbalite warriors, the witches, and the racks. And we've saw a lot of people talking about witches, and they do indeed, they can get three attacks. They come with base two attacks, and then you can get the Hecatari Blade, which each time the bearer fights, it can make one additional attack with this weapon. They move 8 inches, they hit on threes, you can get up to 20 of them in a unit.
Oh, wow, that's a strong unit for counter-assaulting, too.
Yeah, and they can get the poisoned weapon ability. And the weapon, if it's a poison weapon, the weapon wounds on a 4+, unless it's targeting a vehicle or titanic unit, in which case it wounds on a 6+. So the Hecatari Blade is not poisoned, but the Agonizer and the Splinter Pistol are both poisoned.
Okay. So it's giving you versatility to your attacks. You know, you're not too concerned about what's coming at you at that point.
Well, each model is armed with a Splinter Pistol, Hecatari Blade, and Plasma Grenades.
Nice. That's a good loadout.
Well, the plasma grenade is grenade D6 with -1 AP, damage 1.
Yeah, that's going to be strong. What's the range on it that they can
it's
throw?
It's 6 inches.
Okay.
And these guys both get the power from pain that we talked about and the combat drugs, which we also talked about. And they've got the dodge ability. Models in this unit have a 6+ invulnerable save, which is increased to a 4+ invulnerable save in the fight phase.
Oh, wow. So they're that. Wow.
Well, they have a 6+ armor save, but if you get them into the fight phase, we're dealing with a 4+ invulnerable.
With three attacks. I mean, that's brutal when you start thinking about it.
And they've got the same no escape ability that we talked about with Lilith, meaning there's a roll off if anybody tries to fall back with them. So I think you're kind of interested in taking larger units with these guys.
Yeah. Blocks of 20 sound amazing. And I'm assuming they're price appointed very reasonably.
Let's check on that. So a witch is 8 points to start. So then they're looking at the Hecatari Blade, which is 0 points, and then a Splinter Pistol is 0 points. So you're looking at an 8-point model.
Yeah, that's a steal, man. Those are actually, just for an apples to oranges, they're better than Zangor's now.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Just by themselves. Now, a buffed Zangor unit, you know, that's a whole other topic for a whole other story. But by themselves, they're only 1 point more. And they got that 4+ invuln versus the 5+ invuln. The poison and all that stuff. I think that these guys are just a little bit better in combat, in my opinion.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, Ricky Addington joined in with us.
And Zangors just look cooler, in my opinion, but you know, whatever.
And the witches are great models, man.
Oh, yeah, those are fun. They have a lot of, like, you know, different poses and bits, and you can get pretty creative with them. That is a very good sculpt that's going to hold up for a while.
We saw a graphic coming from the Warhammer community side that said that the Talos were an improved unit in this codex. And, you know, they do get the insensible, talking about the Talos now, get the insensible to pain, which the models have a 5+ invulnerable save. So that's, you know, a thing with toughness 6, 7 wounds with an invulnerable save and the power from pain ability, with 5 attacks apiece.
What's their movement look like?
They have an 8-inch move.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good.
I can see. Yeah, they've got a wide range of weapon options, and the base points on the Talos is 75 points.
Yeah, it's a durable, quick move, you know, moving target there for you to spread around and do some chaos with. I like it.
I think they add like a big, if you were building a kind of a gunline type army, these guys are a fair amount of counter assault. Now, they're not characters that can be picked out and shot, and they do only have those 7 wounds, but they also had that 5+ invulnerable save and a 3+ armor save, and their toughness 6.
Just, little mini just demon roll
fives.
Princes.
Yeah, just roll that's fives. Right. Yeah,
just roll fives, and there's no problems at all.
Hey, it's just the secret to get good right there. Roll five plus every time. Unless it's leadership.
Fives and sixes. Yeah, so I mean, I think that these types of things, when you see lots of attacks for a low point investment, you need to kind of perk up. And when you see a durability on what seems to be a low point investment model, you also have to kind of perk up, especially when it can benefit from the army's kind of baseline special rules, which is the power from pain. So the longer that thing is on the table, the kind of beefier it's getting. Now, it's not going to benefit from the morale test because, you know, it could be a potentially single model unit, but it will benefit, I think, from everything else.
I tell you what I like about what we've covered so far is, you know, when we're used to Dark Eldar in the past, it's just been a bunch of gunboats with Venoms and Raiders. I feel like the actual infantry models that the army has are actually, you know, a little bit more playable now, and there's things to play off with them. So we're going to see them actually on the table instead of just, yeah, you know, they're sitting in that Venom that, you know, we blow away.
The Venom, it's open topped. Models embarked on this model can attack in their shooting phase. There's no, like, number of models. It's not saying that three models or two models or whatever. It says models embarked on this model can attack in their shooting phase. Measure the range and draw a line of sight from any point on the model. When they do so, any restriction or modifiers that apply to this model also apply to the passengers. For example, the passengers cannot shoot if this model has fallen back in the same turn, cannot shoot except with pistols if the model is within 1 inch of an enemy unit, and so on. Note that the passengers cannot shoot if this model falls back, even though the Venom itself can. The Venom has fly and it can get in combat, fall back, and shoot.
I like that balancing factor because that can be overwhelming.
Yeah. The flicker field subtract one from the hit rolls for attacks that target this model in the shooting phase.
That's always scary if you love plasma.
Well, I mean, it is. It's actually pretty good because it has six wounds. It doesn't degrade. There's no chart on this vehicle, but it's only toughness five. So you're looking for any kind of durability you can get.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, as a, you know, Dark Angel, so of course I've got plasma on everything. So anytime I see a minus one, I get real nervous about whether or not I'm going to supercharge. So yeah. that minus one is, I mean, it's, there's multiple reasons that is good. Obviously it's harder to hit, but on top of that, all of a sudden it becomes much riskier for plasma to try to really punch through there in one or two shots.
That's the flicker field gives it is a minus one, and the night shield, the model has a five plus invulnerable save.
Yeah. I mean, depending on the point cost of those upgrades, it sounds like they're must takes if you're going to go that gunboat route.
The model can transport five Drakari infantry models other than Grotesque, Scourges, or Skyward models. So it can take, you know, the Warriors and the Trueborns and whatever. The Raider has the same open top ability.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see a ton of them anyway because everybody that played Dark Eldar before has like 50 of these things. So they're going to hit the tables, and I think they're really good. So it's as far as transports go, I mean, I wish Space Marines had something like that. I'd take it.
Well, I kind of miss firing out the top of Rhino.
Oh, yeah. That was nice. My little missile launcher, my Melta gun always shooting out of the top of that thing. Never got my dudes out.
Yeah, I mean, I dig it. I know we're kind of jumping around in the book, but I think these are the things that people that are playing or Drakari are going to have already. This is stuff we should at least investigate to see if it's worth putting on the table right now. And what we just talked about, the Venoms, and they still have their poison weapons.
Yeah, it's that versatility of fire like I was talking about earlier.
Still going to struggle with vehicles, but anything that's not a vehicle, you're making tons of save.
Yeah, but they got Dark Lances.
Yeah, Dark Lances on
everywhere on some of their other stuff. I feel like, yeah, like, you know.
Yeah, let's be honest. Like, what Dark Eldar player do you know that doesn't have two Raiders and at least three Venoms? You know, those are the staples of getting that army around.
Let's talk about Dark Lances as y'all talked about it. Like, the Dark Lance on the Razorwing Jetfighter is a 36-inch weapon, heavy 1, strength 8, negative 4 AP, D6 weapon. And then the ability of this weapon is change the type from the heavy to assault if it's equipped on a vehicle.
I hate Dark Eldar for that alone. So, like, when 8th first came out, you know, we kept the store open, and it was, like, real late, and people were just coming out of the woodwork to try it. And, you know, I was still playing Imperial Knights like crazy, so I was like, I'll put some Knights out. And I had my Knights on the table, and my buddy come rolling up with his Dark Eldar, and I was like, oh, this will be easy, because I had 7th in my head. Next thing I know, knights were just getting blown up by dark lances, and I was like, oh, okay, ouch. And so, yeah, dark lances, no joke. I I like them a lot. And, man, having those on a aircraft just going wherever they want is real good.
Well, if I can talk about the dark lance just stats here for a second, the fact that it is neg 4 AP strength 8, I mean, that's similar to the plague burst crawler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
with his damage, and that's it. If it's on a vehicle, you change to assault. The plague burst crawler does not have that, and you're hitting on fours and fives most of the time. These things are going to be hitting on threes and or better in a lot of cases.
Yeah,
and that is really darn good to get a D6 weapon with a -4 save.
Yeah, you're shredding vehicles with that. I mean, that's where the coolness about to me, like this army. As a whole, you know what the weapon is for. You know what I mean? Like, there's no getting around. This is your damage dealer. And, you know, the poison weapons, you know, those are great to clear out some tougher stuff or infantry alike. I mean, it's effective on both. You know, your witch's attack, your cabalites or your gun line, you know, everything is so clear as to its purpose. I think that bodes to a well-written book.
Let's talk about the buffs that some of the characters spill out. This is the Archon, the original face wearer, meaning he wore someone else's face on his face.
That's a little gross.
Take his face off.
Oh, gosh. Now I have Nicolas Cage in my brain.
He has the Overlord ability. Reroll hit rolls of 1 for friendly Cabal units that are within 6 inches of this model. So it's not something that we just talked about with the Necrons, with being able to nominate, you know, where you nominate a single unit. He has that straight area of effect buff like we've seen with other characters.
Nice.
Then we're getting into like some of the name characters like Drezar. That is the guy with the rumored to be the Striking Scorpion. A Phoenix Lord that fell to the Dark Eldar side of things.
Yeah, a little lore action for you.
He has a 5+ invulnerable save, and then if Jazar charges in the charge phase, he can fight an additional time in the next fight phase.
That's kind of unique.
Which the next fight phase is the fight phase that comes right after the charge.
I was trying to carry the two in that equation there. Like
I'm helping you out. He gets to fight twice.
All right. That's fun. How many? Let's see. What? 4 attacks base. So, yeah.
5 wounds, 4 attack space, hitting on 2s. He has strength 4, but his single blade is +1 strength, -3 AP, then 1 damage. And you choose a profile, or you can do the -2 AP, and a model attacks with dual blades can make 2 additional attacks with them each time it fights. So you could be making, you know, 6 attacks.
Does anybody else have that double attack ability stock, like without a stratagem?
Berserkers.
Oh, okay.
Karn might then too, you know, I would assume extrapolate from that. And he has the Tormentor ability. Each time your opponent takes a morale test for a unit that is within 6 inches of the enemy incubi units, and the result of the morale test equals the highest leadership characteristic for the unit, the test is failed and one model flees the unit. So if you roll exactly what you need, he takes one anyway. And he buffs up incubi units around him. Add 1 to the hit roll. So it's not reroll ones, you're adding 1 to the hit roll for all incubi around him.
That's pretty cool. I like that, because then you're re-rolling your ones, and then you get to add on top of that. So
and
that's pretty
cool. If you had a Lord nearby, you or an Archon, you would. Yeah.
Oh, my bad. I was still thinking Archon.
And correct me if I'm wrong. There's not a lot of units out there that give +1 to your units, right? Like, I don't think so. Like, yeah. All the stuff I'm thinking of is
Necrons,
re-roll.
Necrons could pick one unit and give them a +1
right.
to their hit rolls.
Yeah, it's rare. It's rare in 8th edition buff, to see those +1s out there. So that's something to take advantage of.
The incubi are no slouch. They have 3 attacks apiece hitting on 3 pluses, and their clave, what their weapon is +1 strength. So strength 4, and they have a -3 AP.
Ugh. They're going to chew through some stuff. And you just mollywopped whoever you were fighting?
From power from pain, the third round, add 1 to the hit rolls made for the unit with this bonus. So they're essentially hitting all the time, especially if you have their Phoenix Lord. I shouldn't call him the Phoenix Lord. If you have Drazar around them or not. You know, and then when you get that wound roll, when you roll the 6s, so you're hitting more often. So you're going to be, of course, fishing for more 6s more often. And then when you do connect, it's -3 AP, and then it is 3 damage apiece.
And is that just for the Clavex? That's just for that one guy?
You're right, Ricky. That is just for the Clavex. So that would be their sergeant. when he rolls a six, but he does have four base attacks.
Yeah, he's got four attacks. Something's gonna happen there. You got a pretty good odds of that, man. And if you get real lucky there, oh my gosh!
And he's already hitting on a 2+, so yeah. He's basically never missing. So things that give the minus or what have you, he is going to be hitting.
The fact that dude could potentially put out 12 damage. I mean, not going to happen most likely, but you know, potentially 12 damage. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, I do like it. Just on this first pass, and I haven't had the book in the hands very, very long right now, it appears that some of the Dark Eldar standards are very playable. The Witches, the Venoms, the Razor Ring Jet Fighters, if people got those, it seems like they're functional. Like you could make an army out of this stuff.
What I was thinking about earlier was like, you know, everybody's got the Raiders, everybody's got the Venoms, but now all of a sudden all these other things are looking, first off, they always looked cool, but you never put them on the table, right? And now all these units are looking pretty cool. I mean, even the Void Raven Bomber, which I think I've seen on the table once, but I think it's such a neat model.
I've seen it. I've been shot up by that thing a lot.
Yeah, that thing, I think that thing is really good. So I'm just excited to see these guys back on the table and see more variety in them. I remember playing a game in 7th edition and somebody put, I think it's the Talos, the crazy looking things on the table.
Yep.
And I was like, what is that? I mean, you see them so rarely. He had to explain everything it did just because I never ran up against them. So I'm looking forward to seeing this stuff on the table.
Well, you mentioned the Void Raven Bomber, so it may be worth talking about here. Is that you get the, it comes with two Void Lances, which are strength 9, neg 4 AP, D6 damage, assault 1. Yeah, and then they get the you can put missiles on them, which are assault D6, and then they get the Void Mine. Once per battle, a Void Raven Bomber can drop a Void Mine on an enemy unit it moves over in one of the movement phases. After the Void Raven Bomber has moved, pick one enemy unit that it flew over, then roll 3d6 for each vehicle or monster in the unit, or d6 for every other model in the unit, up to a maximum of 10d6. For each roll of a 3+, the unit being bombed suffers a mortal wound.
That's holy good. Cow. Yeah, that beats the Dark Angel's Dark Talon. Has the stasis bomb, which is very similar to this, but it's only wounding on 4s. The Void Mine is wounding on 3s, and it's even better against
it's
vehicles.
It's got a 60-inch move is maximum, so yeah. you're going to cross over a unit.
You're going to hit something with that. So that's fantastic. Just one more little screw you to a unit as you fly over them.
Well, yeah, I mean that really puts it to some of those larger screens too.
Yeah. And something you know people don't really think about, that is in the movement phase. It's not really, you're not making a shooting attack. You can just drop that on somebody locked in combat. There's nothing to prevent you from doing that.
Yeah, enemy and it moves over in the movement phase after the Void Bomber has moved. That's Ricky. That's a really good point. The fact that you can target something that you moved over.
Yeah, if you need to.
Now, granted,
it's not guaranteed, but you could potentially get yourself.
Well, like let's say you're going over a vehicle, a monster, like for instance, a Dread Knight Grandmaster, who's a vehicle. Or a Hive Tyrant.
Yeah, I mean, you potentially get mortal wounds right there on them.
You are getting to roll. You're not going to be able, like, I wouldn't single out a character in this case, but I guess technically you could, especially if it had one wound left.
You could, yep. There's nothing to prevent it, because you're not making a shooting attack. You can straight up fly right over a character and drop it on it.
Well, what I've liked with the Void Ray, or with flyers in general, is that sometimes people leave open those pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can scoot. Okay, well, I guess I'm just going to move my 60 inches, and now I'm really close to your warlord, and I'm going to unload everything.
Yeah, it's I've been finding people will leave those little gaps open, and my Dark Talon typically can just get right in there. And with those with the Hurricane Bolters and that Rift Cannon, you can potentially it's the best sniper in my a big giant airplane is the best sniper I have in my army, because sometimes people just forget to screen and don't think about how fast those flyers can be. And you know, it with the way the rules are right now, we don't need facing. So this Void Raven,
you just jump up,
yeah,
right behind it,
yeah,
shooting from his butt.
I guess I shot as I flew over. Maybe I did a barrel roll. Who knows? But it's funny how flyers, if you space your units poorly, a flyer can really get in there and mess up your characters.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. That is something that you got to watch out for. And if you're not prepared, like I'm not sure that people have quite kind of internally processed that some of these flyers, if you don't play with them, they move. It's not a 12-inch move anymore. It's 60 inches, 45 inches, 55 inches kind of thing. That is a long step if you were. And so your screen, like, I think everyone is very comfortable with how to make screens and how to block infantry type stuff. I'm not sure we've all come to grips with just how far the flyers move.
All right, got it. I'm making an all flyer list tomorrow.
Well, good
dark
luck.
Angels. Get that dark talent action going on. It's not bad.
Let's talk about a couple of the relics here, if we can. And some there's a bunch of relics. Some of them are specific to the obsessions, the Kabbalite obsessions, which is that's like the chapter tactics for the Dark Eldar, or so the Jukari. I'm probably gonna say Dark Eldar until I die.
Yeah, I mean,
I just want everyone to know that
you're old. You're set in your ways. It's cool. We know. Right.
Well, the Armor of Misery. This is for the Cabal of the Obsidian Rose and for the Archon only. The wearer has a 3+ save characteristic. In addition, subtract 1 from hit rolls for attacks that target the wearer in the fight phase.
Nice.
So I know we just talked about like sniping characters by using your giant movement, but with a lot of characters, you are going to get up close and personal with them. And I think that subtracting that 1 to hit in the fight phase kind of helps him get in there and fight some of what we would call the standard units, the guys that hit on the 3s and 4s.
And anytime you can make it harder for somebody to hit your character is a win.
I mean, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to have that. It's Dark Angels. We have the shroud for shooting, and it's a great deterrent for people wasting shots. They don't want to waste shots on that character because it's at -1. So it's gonna make that same thing happen for combat. You know, I'm not gonna want to charge him knowing that I'm at -1 to hit. It's going to really make you decide whether or not you're going to waste bodies on that character if you're just going to try to shoot him or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, you obviously, you know, want to take out the character, especially if it's like a warlord or whatever, you know, well in advance of them putting your army in harm's way. But with a character, especially like in this army with fast-moving transports, they could get him across in combat, you know, pretty easily and quickly, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Well, I like the narrative aspect of it, too. I mean, if you're building an Archon, they're generally a little bit more combat-focused, if memory serves. They should be better, right? You know, they should be better at combat and stuff like that, harder to hit.
He's got to get those faces to wear.
Yeah, you know, he can parry, he can dodge, whatever whatever narrative you want to drive with that. So, I like it.
Well, he does have the 2+ invulnerable save from the Shadowfield. Which is pretty crazy if you ask me, but I think that -1 to hit is something he can really maximize even with the Shadowfield's ability.
Did you say a 2+ invul?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know I came in late, but you said that, right?
the Archon, the model, has a 2+ invulnerable save, which cannot be rerolled for any reason. The first time the invulnerable save is failed, the Shadowfield ceases to function for the remainder of the battle. So with this armor that is giving them, you know, making them harder to hit, you're taking less. Saves less opportunities for your Shadowfield to go kaput.
That's a tanky dude right there. That's pretty okay.
He's got 5 attacks too.
Yeah, goodness,
I like it.
Yeah, I mean he can get in there and mix it up if you ask me.
2+ invul. Oh my gosh,
you didn't know that?
no. Like I said, when do I see these? You know, it's like we had 1 or 2 guys in our local area. That is fantastic.
So another one of the things I want to talk about is the Helm of Spite. This is the bearer can attempt to deny 1 psychic power in each enemy psychic phase in the same manner a psyker, as if it were a psyker. In addition, each time the bearer makes a successful deny the witch test, the psyker that attempted to manifest the power suffers a perils of the warp.
Mm. I like forcing perils on people.
Well,
that's fun.
You know, what we talk about is, like, for instance, the Tau. The Tau have no way to deny psychic powers. So that immediately puts them at risk for some of the Yanari shenanigans and things of that nature. So being able to take one of these artifacts, and, you know, depending, you know, in different tournaments, some of them make you take, you know, list what your relics are before the game starts. Some let you pick it game to game. So you can use that stratagem. Oh, you're fighting a psychic heavy army. Well, let me at least burn 1 of my command points and get another relic kind of thing.
Right.
So maybe you don't take it all the time, but the times that you do, it's still a roll. I mean, I prefer, like we talked about, like Black Templars getting that 4+ deny, you know, but just being able to get the roll. And then if you do win the roll, then the enemy Psyker is taking, you know, some damage, taking D3 mortal wounds.
How have most tournaments been running that as far as like, you know, paying pre-game, paying the point to get another relic? Have most tournaments been
50, man? It's about, yeah, 50. I prefer to have them listed on the list. Like it, like for the tournaments that I run, I'm going to heavily imply, like if I'm partnered with anybody, I'm going to heavily suggest that I prefer the relics to be written down on the army list when you submit.
Right. And that speeds up play and everything and makes it a little more transparent. And yeah, that's great. But on those tournaments that they don't, that I hadn't even thought about that, how versatile that becomes to be able to pull in a relic to help you deny the witch when, you know, you may not have that normally. And, you know, you're not going to need it against, you're never going to need it against my army because I never have a Psyker. You're not going to need it against Tau. So, you know, why burn the relic? And then when you do come up against those armies, pay the command point, pull it into your list and have some versatility. That's really cool to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think it's strong. I mean, the fact that you're doing that little needle again. I mean, most characters don't have a ton of wounds. Like, they've got 5 wounds, some have 3 wounds, some have 4 wounds kind of thing. So if you are able to get a lucky block and then apparels on them, that could be enough to put them out.
Yeah, and then you let your Void Raven Bomber finish them off.
Zooming on across. 10d6, let's go.
Oh, my goodness.
I just bought 3 of them on eBay.
Yep.
Void Raven Bombers.
Shopping right now.
My bad. I'm not impulsive. It's cool.
No, man. I understand. I mean, I get it. We're jumping around here, and we're talking about the first pass with the Dark Eldar. Let's talk about some points. I think that's probably the next thing. We talked about the witches are 8 points. I mean, that just seems a little cheap, if you ask me. I mean, I shouldn't say cheap. That's aggressively pointed.
I love how you always bring that up diplomatically. Anytime off the air, you might be like, I don't know, guys, that seems a little cheap. Aggressively.
Well, I mean, you want the troops to be good. You want to be plentiful and good. I mean, and they are. They're a troop unit.
Yeah, well, you want them on the table, you know. I mean, remember at one point how rare it was to see, you know, blobs of infantry on the table. It used to just be vehicle, 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 and then your mandatory troop choices. And now being able to put lots of troops out there and actually feel like you're, you know, playing in the terrain and moving models around, I'm all for that style.
These guys have a ton of attacks too. Like, they just got, they're just good. I mean, if you ask me.
Well, like I said, you know, comparing them to Zangors, those are 7 points. We all know how strong those are. And now, you know, we're upping the game for one more point. I do feel like witches are stronger. I agree with you.
Just have the 6+ invulnerable save, unless they're in close combat, then it's a 4+.
That's huge. You get 20 of them in close combat and relish the fact that half of those wounds don't matter.
Yeah, but and you're keeping them in a transport anyway. If you're running witches maybe across the table,
I'm not. I'm running 20. Let's walk. Let's go.
What is 20 really? Witches? 160 points?
Right, with an 8-inch move, advance, they're charging turn 2.
One of those units has a 10-inch move.
Oh, yeah, fact. With the
combat drugs.
The combat drugs, yeah.
The other one has 5 attacks apiece.
Hello. 2 blocks of 20. Here I come, eBay.
Well, okay, let me add it up. So the 2 attacks, so they wouldn't have 5 attacks apiece. They would have 2 attacks plus 1, so they have 4 attacks apiece for combat drugs if you gave them the adrenalite.
That's still a lot, man. 20 times 4. I'm not a mathematician, but that sounds like 80.
Yeah, it's a ton. Yeah, and then you could also have 1 unit if you want hitting on 2s.
Yeah.
So what I'm gonna say is if we're at a tournament and you find yourself in a situation where witches are charging corn berserkers, I want someone to yell at me and I will come running over to the table and I'm gonna watch because it's gonna be a bloodbath. It's gonna be fun to watch.
Well, let's talk about what ruins most assault armies. And what ruins and wrecks assault armies is some infantry unit you lock up with having one guy left. Let's say the opponent is either immune to morale or burns their command points to make that unit not flee.
Right.
And then they fall back and then you're just sitting there. You're not able to really break away from them and move into the enemy lines where you consolidate. You're just standing there waiting to get shot up. the witches at least give you an opportunity to keep that from happening.
I don't know, man. To me, I feel like they're great all around. I think that they're great for if you're going to use them as a screen in the back to counter assault with. I'm running them forward. I think that they're a very aggressive unit to move forward in a big block for not a lot of points. You throw them a couple in Raiders and then have them jump out and start charging some stuff. There's just so much about this unit and the point cost about them that makes them appealing to me. I almost don't even care about Cabalite Warriors and their strength in those as well. I mean, their guns are pretty good.
Guns are good. They're fairly expensive point-wise also. And let's talk about quickly about the obsessions. These are, what we talked about, the kind of chapter tactics. And the Cabal of the Black Heart, Thirst for Power. Units with this obsession have the Power from Pain ability. Treat the current battle round as being one higher than it actually is when determining the bonuses they gain.
And that's the one that you're running if you're running a witch heavy army like I am.
Units with this obsession that do not have Power from Pain ability instead gain the inured suffering bonus. Inured to suffering bonus on page 87. That's a feel no pain.
That's huge. Because, okay, so earlier in the show we were talking about how each round, as it progresses, it makes sense. We get to do things around earlier now with that chapter. What is the word called for them?
Sorry. It's the obsessions.
Obsession. So that obsession lets them do everything one round sooner because you're getting that benefit already. So now I'm already moving a little faster. I'm already hitting a little harder. I'm already a little more durable before any other Dart or Jakari unit out there or force out there. So it's putting the one up in your favor. Like that's what I'm talking about. Two big blocks of 20 running at you. That's 360 points, something like that. That's not a lot of points, bro.
Yeah, I'm digging it, man. I'm thinking it's going to be about some witches in this codex, which is good because it is a staple of the army. It's been a staple of the army for many years at this point, and so I think Dark Elder players have a fair amount of them.
Oh yeah, witches used to be baller because the way the grenades used to work, the plasma grenades were amazing, and I think they're still really great now, especially. So, prior to charging, getting to toss some of those grenades, that's going to be great.
Oh, the D6 grenades? Yeah. And that factors in a lot on, like, Overwatch. Like, you might as well roll it and see if you tag it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many benefits to how this book seems like it's playing out. And, as we start deep in more and finding some of these combos and what relic goes to what guy and how we can manipulate these things, we'll definitely be sharing that with everybody. But as it stands now, I just... My first impulse reaction is to say that this is like a solid like 8 out of 10 book. I don't quite know what it's gonna do, and so I can't say like, okay, yes, it's winning the Bay Area Open or the SoCal Open or whatever next major GT is coming up. I don't know if it's gonna win it, but I'll be darn shocked if it doesn't make a good impression at the next major that we see.
Well, it's going to give you a lot of reliable hitting shots. And I think that if you're able to get into combat or take a lot of the guns, we're going to be back to what they were before, that they're doing a lot of shooting and a lot of wounding.
Man. No. I just hope to see witches everywhere. I mean, I agree with you, though. I do think that the other forms that you're talking about, I think those are very fun armies to play as well. Scooting around and shooting and maneuvering and stuff like that. I think it's a very fun and strong army build. But me personally, I just love the witches.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, so with the rating, let's talk about a little bit about just how you build your army. And then you're able to get, if you take all troops in the detachment, if it's Battleforged and they're all Drakari, then you get the OPSEC ability. And there's the rating force. If your Battleforged army includes at least 3 Drakari patrol detachments, you receive +4 command points. If your army includes 6 or more Drakari patrol detachments, you receive +8 command points.
That's
all the command points. That's all the command points. Like
if
your opponent
you already
doesn't
have
admit
yeah, six yeah. patrols.
Yeah.
And then +4 command points, +3 for being Battleforged. That is a ton of Agents of Vector or whatever that you're pulling off on people.
Yeah. What's the requirement for the patrol? It's just 1 HQ, 1 troop, right?
So the obsessions are, as we were discussing, and I think that rating force ability is, I mean, that's going to be strong, especially when like you have one of the most powerful stratagems in the game that we've seen. Like, I think that might, that actually might be the most powerful stratagem we have ever seen in the game so far, is being able to blank someone else's stratagem and potentially take it from them for the rest of the game.
You have to like, I don't know, like have like a beer or something under the table ready to hand to your opponent when you play that stratagem.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you roll that six, especially.
Like, you might need to pull out a whole bottle of Jack.
I'm sorry, brother. Let's hug this out.
Yeah. That is going to cause all the salty tears in the world. And Man, I hope it happens to me. I want to see it.
So the Blades for Hire is one of the special rules that the Drakari Beast and Incubi, Mandrakes and Scourges don't count against your obsession. Have the Cabalite obsession keyword, but they don't count against you for taking them.
Okay. That's kind of unique, I guess.
Well, it's the same thing we've seen with Astra Militarum, where things may not have the regiment keyword, but they're in the codex, and you can still take them in your army list, and it doesn't count against your total or your ability to gain the benefits. We were right about that. So the patrol is one HQ and one troop mandatory.
So here's my list: 10 patrols, one archon.
You only need 6 patrols.
10. Hear me out. I mean, just I don't know how to math, but you know, you guys figure that out for me. Archon. 20 witches each patrol. Go.
Well, you gotta throw a Lilith bucks. In there. You gotta throw a Lilith in there.
Okay, so one of them, I will put the Archon aside, and I'll put Lilith in there, and then we'll say we're thematic at that point. Is that a? Do I get points for theme?
Yeah. Well, there are other obsessions, the witch cult obsessions. So there are three different types in here. There's the Cabal obsessions, the witch cult obsessions, and the Homunculus coven obsessions. So each of these are all what are essentially, again, the chapter tactics of the Drakari.
Great book, man. I don't know who wrote it. I don't. I know that they have like a committee of guys that are working on this now. Yeah. If you guys are listening, bravo.
Well, the cult of strife. The spectacle of murder increased the attack characteristics of models with this obsession by 1 during any turn in which they charged, were charged, or made a heroic intervention. So we're back up to 5 attacks.
Yeah. I like that one. That one's fun. It's funny just how much this reminds me of the new Age of Sigmar battle tome. The Daughters of Cain.
We talked a little bit about Daughters of Cain in the Power from Pain section we're talking about. But this is where the Daughters of Cain tops out at defensive at the top end of the chart. This tops out as offensive at the top of the chart, which is kind of neat. And there's the Cult of the Red Grief. The speed of the kill is the subtext here. Units with this obsession can charge in the same turn in which they advance. In addition, you can reroll failed charge rolls for the units with this obsession, and that is for the witch cults. So, you know, one thing's got a 10-inch move, potentially advance 6 inches, 16-inch move, then you're charging.
And re-rolling.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. We're kind of having the problem of not like, oh, there's nothing to take. We're having the problem of there's too many fun ways to do this.
Well, so, I don't know if you caught the Necron show yet, but that codex is just absolutely chock full of cool things. And I think we're in the same way with the Necrons. Like, I think that GW has used the opportunity here and have taken, I don't want to say like, they've taken armies here that had, like, you just knew there was one way to play Necrons for the most part, and there were two ways to play Dark Eldar, and they were a little bit, you just knew what to expect. They didn't surprise you in any way.
Yeah.
And these codexes have gone so far as to surprise us, I think, with the flexibility and just the sheer number of options. I'm impressed.
Yeah. And it's not just good for, like, for like that player trying to build a specific build or something like that, or just for the variety of different players. It's one person can get so much more enjoyment out of the book because they can play the same list. You know, they can do this and then they just change over that obsession and pick another one and try it that way. They don't even really have to change their models or their army to try different things with their codex. And on top of that, it gives a player so much more enjoyment out of their codex because they're going to have all these different builds that they can get out of it instead of that one build. You play this and you're done. And that's like the Custodes army. If I mean, I love Custodian, but you know, if I'm honest, it's a bit of a mono build right now. And that is the exact opposite of what the Drakari have going on for them right now. And it's fantastic.
I want to talk about the Homunculus Covens for a second. You know, that is a like a regiment keyword as well. The Homunculus Covens, the Witch Cults, and what have you. And the Coven of the 12, Butchers of Flesh, improve the armor penetration characteristics of all melee weapons used by a model with a succession by one. For example, an armor penetration characteristic of 0 becomes -1, and so on and so forth. This does not apply to any artifacts of cruelty. Which is fine. The Talos that we were talking about for briefly earlier has something called a macro scalpel. If a model is equipped with two macro scalpels, each time it fights, it can make one additional attack with them. So the Talos has 5 attacks base. You're jumping the attacks up. It's a melee weapon and then becomes AP -3 for 2 damage apiece plus 1 strength. So you're swinging at strength 7.
My God, George.
When you start seeing -3 damage and 2 damage apiece, I mean, you're killing, and I hate to bump everything against Blood Angels, but you're killing Sanguinary Guard like it's your job. You know, you're killing Primaris Marines.
Yeah, that was my first go-to. Was like, that's a Primaris outright dead.
Yeah, I mean, and when you see that 2 damage on an effective weapon that has -2, -3 AP, you're racking up lots of things. You're killing Rhinos at that point. You're killing Storm Ravens, you know. I mean, you're killing just about anything. You're sneaking in some wounds and doing some extra additional damage to Magnus or Mortarion. I mean, it's pretty strong. You're forcing them to go over to the invulnerable save, and you know, and like a Demon Prince, for instance, it only has a 3+ armor save and a 5+ invulnerable save. So if you're hitting it with a -3 AP, you're forcing it to use its invulnerable save, and you're doing big damage with your mini attacks.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to end up building a stinking Drakari army. I don't want to do that. I can't do that.
A witch cult, man. It might be good.
This is why I'm going to be honest. Sometimes I really don't like being on this podcast because we start talking about this stuff and then I start looking at the models and then I'm like, I could do that. And those Mandrake models to me are some of the coolest models in 40K and I want them on the table.
Yeah. We're all talking about what you can do with the army. And there is a stratagem, the Cruel Deception. That's a 2 command point stratagem, which we just, by the way, described that you're going to have like 1,000 command points. So, you know, what is 2 points to you? Basically nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
That's 2 of your free command points that you've gotten. And then use this stratagem if a Drakari unit from your army falls back. That unit can still shoot and charge this turn.
And charge. That is fun.
Well, I mean, we're talking about building a assault heavy army. I mean, that's what we're talking about. We keep being drawn to it. Now, maybe that's just our inclination as players.
I don't know. I think Dark or Drakari players kind of have that tendency themselves. I mean, it's
if you don't want to take the face off, you can't shoot their face off. You have to take it off.
You can't wear it if you don't take it off. Ugh. And here's the thing. I feel like in this army, you're not going to be falling back so much as falling forward. So you can charge something and then fall back towards your actual target and then attack them again. Or, you know, I mean, to be able to fall out of combat towards the enemy and then charge right back in your next turn is going to be brutal. It can be brutal to people because you can just get right through a screen.
You could phase shift through it.
We talked about the witch cult obsessions with the cult of strife. There is a 3 command point stratagem. Now, again, we haven't even touched your detachment level stratagems yet. We're still in the freebies.
See?
Use this stratagem just after a cult of strife unit from your army has destroyed an enemy unit in either the shooting phase or fight phase. If used in the fight phase, use this stratagem after the attacking unit has consolidated. If the enemy unit was destroyed in the shooting phase, you can immediately shoot an additional time in the fight phase. If the enemy unit was destroyed in the fight phase, your unit can immediately fight an additional time in this phase. So this is this is letting you shoot or fight again. This is like a 3 command points soul burst. You know, if you ask me, for your whole unit.
I'm telling you, 120 witches, 960 points.
Just witches, all day witches. just all day witches. And that's the thing, like, what are they not going to kill? You put that many attacks on something, something's going through. You're going to fail a save eventually. And well,
what I like is that, say, you get up on something big. Let's say we're a knight, for instance, and you do a bunch of damage to it just by the sheer weight of dice, but you don't quite kill it or you don't take it down that next tier. Well, now, before the swing back, you say, okay, what? You know what? I'm going to swing again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably brutal.
You've probably already taken wounds off of it just because, you know, your raiders have shot it up with the dang lances, and you know that knight ain't making his save. And trust me, I got 9 sitting on the shelf because those knights ain't making their save.
Man, they are not. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
And so they're going to be swinging back most likely on 4s at best anyway by that point these things go in. And I'm telling you, man, witches, just all the witches.
This sounds like a really fun army to play. Like, I just imagine like a bunch of, because I'm going to take raiders. Even if I don't put the witches in them, I'm taking the raiders.
Raiders' base points are 65 points. Venoms are base 55 points. I think that's the same as it was.
Yeah.
Raiders.
Yeah, you get a little bit more shots out of the raiders, I think.
How many points is a dark lance?
No, the venoms. You get more shots out of it. I think you get shots out of the venoms.
Or, well, the raiders are the quality shot, right? Because it's got the lance.
You can have a dark lance on there, yeah. You can.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
A dark lance is 20 points.
So 85 points for a raider. that's what I just heard.
Yeah. I mean, you could be right. You know, and that's, we haven't talked about how, like, when you start diluting this, like, it's easy to say, okay, let me load up 100 witches.
120 is only 960 points. I don't see an issue here. I already did the math.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's not bad.
You still have 1,040 points to play with.
It's some of those witches, even if you run those across the table, some of those witches are getting there, and then they're going to just puree.
Well, I mean, this thing, you start breaking them up into venoms. You know, you are getting to shoot out of the back with their poison splinter pistols, plus the poison weapons from the venom. The venoms are harder to hit. They've got the invulnerable save and their neg 1 to hit. You know, it just speaks to a deceptively survivable army, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool ways to get you there. I think this is going to be a really cool book all around. You can almost throw darts at the codex and, like, you know, just kind of land on things.
We've only talked about like 3 units.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of crazy. Like, okay.
And three, you know, regiments type of stuff, you know?
Ricky brought up mandrakes earlier, and mandrakes have been notorious for one of the best sculpts GW's ever made.
Oh, beautiful models.
Rules wise, they have
units. Yeah.
Never been great. Can we just like touch on them to get, can we give mandrakes hope?
Yeah. Okay. So the mandrakes, they have 3 base attacks. They're strength 4 base also. So that's different than most of the others. They have the Bale Blast and the Glimmer Steel Blade. The Bale Blast is it's a strength 4 assault 2 18-inch weapon, neg 1 AP, damage 1. Each time you roll a wound with a 6+, the weapon for this weapon, the target suffers a mortal wound in addition to any other damage.
Whoa.
Okay.
The Glimmer Steel Blade is a melee. It's a AP neg 1 strength to user, so 4. They have the Power from Pain. The Shrouder from Sight, subtract 1 from hit rolls of the attacks that target this unit. In addition, the models in this unit have a 5+ invulnerable save.
Okay, so they got to be 75 points each then.
They also have the from Out of the Shadows. During deployment, you can set this unit up in the realm of the Eliadroch. Instead of placing on the battlefield, they can come up anywhere, in, you know, 9 inches away from an enemy mod. They've had that infiltrate rule for a while, I think. And then the Mandrakes themselves are 16 points apiece. So that
ain't bad.
That's a little weighty, if you ask me.
Or are they 1 wound?
They are 1 wound.
Yeah, I mean, they really only have that 5+ invul going for them. So, I mean, their normal save is a 7+. Yeah.
So they've got a fill no pain of a 6 and the 5+ invulnerable, but they do get to come out, you know, in potential charge range.
Yeah.
16 points makes them still mandrakes. I like that. Way to keep with the theme. But they do sound a lot better. Like, I specifically really like that shooting attack. I think, you know, especially you're going to infiltrate, right?
So yes, it's assault too, hitting on 3s.
Yeah, so 5 dudes, it's 10 shots getting in there. You know, you're probably going to squeeze 1 or 2 mortal wounds out of there.
I think you can banking on at least 1 mortal wound.
I can get behind them a little bit more. I mean, 16 points is still a little,
I'd rather just run over there with a 10-inch witch charge and choke somebody out.
Yeah. I mean, I could see them being useful. So just hold them off the table. to like turn three and then pop them up like to in the backfield or something, you know, for like grabbing objectives or line break or something like it, trying to do something with them like that. But I don't know, man. I feel like, you know, somebody
they cost 10 witches.
Yeah. Let's get more witches.
I mean, each one of these is what, 2.5 witches?
Yeah. Yeah, 2 witches each. Yeah,
we're on the witch economy right now.
They look so good. They though.
Do. You know, I wouldn't even be hurt. My feelings wouldn't be hurt if you used them as witches.
To tell you the truth, though, for
wallet would hurt.
Yeah, for a squad of 5, it's 80 points. So that's not terrible, right? You could find a reason to put them in a list if you truly love the model, you truly want to see it on the table. I don't think they suck as bad as they used to.
Well, I mean, the book's going to come down to, I shouldn't say the book. Let me say that the optimization within list is going to come down to making the most out of your detachments, because let's also, like we talked about, you know, taking 1,000 detachments or whatever, but you could have a witch cult, you could have a homunculus coven, you could have a cabal, and you're going to be wanting to maximize the rules for those guys.
Fact. Yeah. This is fun. I really can't see, you know, too many things that are going to deter me away from choices. I all jokes aside, you know, nobody go out and buy 120 witches, please.
No, well, I mean, I'm not telling you not to. Yeah. you might win some games just on
sheer weight of dice. Yeah,
I'm going to say that the very next GT, it's just going to be like 400 witches winning.
A sea of witches.
That was so open.
Where I was going with that, the mandrakes don't have any of those. They don't have
a cult. They don't benefit.
They don't have a witch cult or whatever. They don't have that. And so you're just going to be just banking off the stats of those guys. And I think that unless you're just a mandrake enthusiast, or you find yourself needing that kind of backfield penetration, that you'll probably focus more on the ones that get that regiment bonus.
Yeah, I like what Ricky said though. Save it for a couple rounds and then pop up in the back, and you know maybe slay the warlord that way. If they, you know, sometimes people just take that cheap lieutenant or whatever.
Well, I like what you're saying though, because like if you go with part of the strategy that we're talking about, which is heavily commit in round 1 and 2.
All in.
You might want to see where you need to go on round 3 with your mandrakes or something like that.
And don't forget that with mandrakes, you know, you hold off at least turn 2, and then they're re-rolling those charges when they come out with power from pain, or, you know, 3. So if you can hold them off to 3, they're much more likely to get your points out of them, you know. So that I like that. I like that you just hold them off the table, bring them in later, and get more benefits from power for pain from them. And I think if you look at them that way, they're a little more feasible.
There are a bunch of units in this codex. Again, I know we've only talked about a few of them. We will have part 2 of our Necrons and Drukhari stuff coming up very soon. I'm going to try to record as absolutely much as we can over the next couple of weeks and get some of this stuff out. I think this is a good time to stop, though, for this episode. You guys want to comment or ask about anything else before we wrap up right now?
I don't want to say witches again, so I'm out.
Yeah, witches just...
Well, okay, everybody listening, please know that we got some tournaments coming up. We're going to be going to some tournaments. We have the Louisville Slugga coming up June 9th. That's in Louisville, Kentucky. We have an event going on Facebook. We're running that in conjunction with the Bourbon Brothers gaming group out of that area. It is going to be a really fun time, and we should have a complete run of codexes and stuff out by then. So there's going to be just a really interesting ecosystem in 40K with everything coming out, and that's going to be in a cycle where we're not going to be worrying about an FAQ or a chapter approved or something. It's going to be a thriving, if you ask me, very competitive tournament environment, and that is coming up June 9th and 10th in Louisville. That is coming up. It's going to be a full-on all 8th edition coming tournament. Please check it out. Register if you can. Send us questions if you'd like to know more about the event. Look forward to seeing you guys there.
Oh, yeah.
I just feel like every day is Christmas right now. Every day is Christmas.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I see dead people.